powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Let's talk NFL draft with Pro Football Focus's Sam Monson. He joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Sam, we are so excited to talk to you about a two-round mock draft, about who you think the Seahawks could take at 16, but I'm actually going to start with a Washington prospect who I don't know if he'll land with Seattle, but obviously all eyes here in Washington State are tracking him. You wrote a column explaining why you think Michael Penix Jr. should be a first rounder. Why do you think that some folks have him going potentially in the second, and why do you like him as a first round pick?
Yeah, he's had such a fascinating kind of roller coaster ride over this pre-draft process. If we go back to the season, his stock was only going up when he had that incredible game against Texas. We were talking about him as a first-round guy, somebody that was going to go in the middle of the first round, could even sneak his way into the top 10. And then the national championship game happens, and all of a sudden, in one game, in 3 hours, he becomes a second-round prospect, and we're done with Michael Penix Jr., and you know he's a consolation prize, somebody that's going to have to come back and get a quarterback in the second round. And then I think it's been kind of rebuilding that initial take. People have been chipping away at it over the last couple of months since, and we're sort of coming back to the area where he was before that one game, which is he's got NFL tools, he's an NFL-caliber athlete, he's got a good arm, and he's got really good college football tape for a couple of years. And, you know, his medical issues have been multiple knee injuries, but they're not sort of seen as chronic problems. You know, he's just had two unlucky, bad knee injuries, and that happens to players sometimes. So I think we're kind of coming round to this idea of there isn't a particularly good reason to separate Michael Penix Jr. from some of these other prospects towards the top of the first round.
There's a theory going around, which I'm buying into, that five or six quarterbacks can go in the first round. You look at the first four picks, I expect the Cardinals to maybe trade out of that. And then you have the Raiders, the Broncos, the Vikings might move up. There's so many teams that that need a quarterback at this point. Are you buying into that theory? And then how would you rank this quarterback class when you compare it to the ones over the last 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to get more than the top four guys that everybody's expecting. Maybe there'll be a fifth one sneak in there. But generally speaking, I think teams have become better at not chasing that quarterback at the bottom of the first round. You know, those guys that are sort of seen as the step down from the next guys, I think teams are getting more patient and waiting on those guys longer. But I think it is a pretty strong quarterback class. Caleb Williams is a special talent, a genuine number one pick in pretty much any draft class. The other guys, I think, are a step down from him, and maybe that takes it away from being one of the best quarterback classes we've seen. But they're all intriguing prospects that have really good selling points, as well as whatever concerns or red flags or negatives you have on them. I mean, Drake May, the entire draft process has been around kind of bashing this guy and saying why he's got some concerns, but his tools are obvious. I mean, he's this incredibly talented quarterback with sort of age on his side and some inexperience, but he could become special, as could Jaden Daniels. J.J. McCarthy is really interesting as well. And then you have the guys like Michael Penix and Bo Nix even further down. So I think it's a strong quarterback class, but I don't know if we're going to get any more than the four, maybe a fifth in that first round.
Now, you guys can head to pff.com/mock for their mock draft simulator, and you can draft players for your favorite team, obviously the Seattle Seahawks. But let's find out some of the picks that Sam has made in one of many mocks, I'm sure. But your latest, a two-round mock draft, is available up at pff.com right now. And you have a very surprising pick. Tell me who you landed on for pick number two to Washington for their new franchise star.
Yeah, pick number two to Washington, I've gone with J.J. McCarthy. All the way through this sort of narrative around the draft, there has been this constant rumbling that the NFL likes J.J. McCarthy more than the general public does or draft analysts do. The inside NFL buildings, they seem to be more enamored with him than everybody else is. And it's, you know, we've reached a point now where everything you hear at this point from insiders and from NFL sources, it's all to be taken with a grain of salt. But that was, from day one. That was sort of way before the lying season started, was always the conversation. So, yeah, I think there's a reasonable chance that the Washington ends up grabbing McCarthy, not Jaden Daniels or Drake May as the quarterback.
I look at the Houston Texans, and I'd say they're one of the winners of this offseason. They've made a whole bunch of moves, but they still have the draft. If there's something that you feel like they need or they should address in this draft, what is that?
I don't think they need to. They've done a really good job, like you say, and they've kind of eliminated glaring needs from that roster. They've got a couple of spots that they could definitely reinforce and try and add some talent in, but I don't think they have any glaring needs anymore. They've done that good a job with the roster. I think the area that I would be looking at for them is corner and offensive line depth as well, just some sort of competition for those spots. They've really added a bunch of these former top 10 talent cornerbacks opposite they're one true star in Derek Stingley, but those guys are sort of failures or reclamation projects at this point in the NFL, and we don't know if they're going to be able to be that legitimate second starter. So if they can find one of those guys and maybe add some competition in the slot, I think those would both be positive developments for that defense. And then the offensive line, I think, is more fragile than it looked last year. I think on paper it's a little bit weaker than the play we got from them last season. So again, just adding competition, maximizing the chances that you're going to get a decent return from that group this year is a positive step that they could make.
In your latest mock, you have the Saints taking Troy Fautanu at pick number 14, two ahead of the Seahawks. And Sam, that hurt my feelings. I took that personally. We've seen him so often mocked to Seattle, and I have my fingers crossed that they can add to the offensive line. You do have them taking an offensive lineman. We're going just one state over to Jackson Powers Johnson. I don't know how many interior offensive linemen are going to go too high in this draft, but it's also Seattle's greatest need. Do you think that Powers Johnson is a reach there? Do you really like him? And what makes him a fit for you for the Seahawks?
Yeah, it's a tough one. The Seahawks obviously don't like taking interior offensive linemen high up in the draft, but at some point you look at their depth chart, you look at the roster and what they have in the interior, and you say, you need to do something. And sure, there's some veterans out there that could come in and be a stopgap approach, but somebody like Jackson Powers Johnson in the middle of the first round, I think, is the right kind of area for him to go. He's an elite center prospect. He's got the size and the power and the ability to play guard if you want him to put him in that spot right away and sort of ease the transition, you know, not overweight him with all the mental aspects that centers need to be able to deal with. So I think he'd be a really natural fit for them. The guy allowed like three pressures in the last couple of years and is built just like a fire hydrant, this just square body, this brick of a human being. I think he'd be an amazing addition to that offensive line.
There have been not rumors, but I've seen scenarios where people question DK's value when it comes to just him being on the Seahawks and then possibly using him as trade bait. I think it is crazy talk. I would never entertain that. But it's that time of the year where people are throwing out these scenarios. How likely is that? Do you believe in that? Just what are your thoughts on the whole DK deal?
Yeah, I don't think it's particularly likely that they move on from him. I think there's definitely a question to be asked that, you know, DK Metcalf was always a less well-rounded wide receiver than some of the other top receivers in the game. You know, he relies on that size, speed, vertical threat, all those kinds of things. And he's become a more well-rounded player than he was when he was coming into the NFL. But he's still, he's never going to be as complete as a guy like Justin Jefferson or, you know, Jamar Chase or some of these other elite receivers in the game. He's just not that type of player. And the thing that he's incredible at, that vertical threat, it has become sort of a slightly smaller part of today's game. Like defenses are concentrating right now and taking away those explosive plays. So I think it is fair to look at a guy like Metcalf and say, okay, is his value diminishing because of what defenses are doing throughout the league right now? And you know, what do we do about that? But I think he stopped short of saying, okay, that means we need to trade him away and move in a different direction. Like you just need to modify a little bit what you're asking him to do within that offense and maybe play to his strengths a bit more.
I've seen a couple mocks that have the Seahawks taking quarterbacks late. I don't know how many people expect them to actually take one early, but given the quarterback situation they're in, which is one laced with some uncertainty, who are some late round, like day three guys, maybe even one in particular that kind of jumps out to you where you go, look, he's a day three guy because he's got a lot of question marks, but I like the upside.
Yeah, it's tough because day three quarterbacks, you know, they by definition have an awful lot of warts attached to their game. I think Spencer Rattler is the one guy that's like everybody's favorite mid-round prospect in this draft. Once you get beyond that top six guys, Spencer Rattler, I think, is the one player everybody's looking at and saying he has legitimate NFL tools. Like, there is a pathway for Spencer Rattler to become a starter in the NFL down the line. He might be the only guy, though. You're looking at the rest of these players and you're like, okay, they probably don't have starting quarterback within their range of outcomes, at least not a very likely one of those things to happen. The only other guy that has at least some of those NFL tools, certainly physically, is Joe Milton from Tennessee. I mean, he might have the best arm, certainly this year's draft, and he might have one of the best arms to ever come into the NFL, but he doesn't have the play to back it up. He's been scattershot. He doesn't have the consistency. He comes from an offense that's difficult to project into the NFL anyway. So, you know, if you simply want a ball of clay and a guy that's got immense physical tools and a ridiculous arm, you might take a guy like Joe Milton and try and develop him from the sideline and see what you can create. But it's a massive projection to sort of to envisage him becoming an NFL quarterback anytime soon.
Man, the more the NFL opens up when it comes to their offense, the more the running backs are getting left behind when it comes to just consideration. Last year, Bijan Robinson was one or the best running back in the draft. What's the status of the running backs this year? Who do you like and who's a sleeper?
So it's seen as a really bad running back class this year. I don't think it's as bad as other people do, but even just the way the NFL was throwing money around in free agency to running backs, which doesn't generally happen, I think you can sort of see an indication that the NFL doesn't think that this is a good year for running backs either. We might not get one taken until the third round, but I think there are going to be a lot of good players in this draft. Jonathan Brooks, I think, has first-round talent, but he's coming off a knee injury, and I think that'll keep him sort of suppressed in the draft, keep him as a second or third round guy. Blake Corum from Michigan, I think, is being overlooked because he came back from a knee injury and didn't quite look like the same guy, at least until the end of the year. I think we started to see some of the old Blake Corum come back, but I think he could be a spectacular player. If we're looking for a sleeper, though, the guy Tyrone Tracy from Purdue was a wide receiver and then converted to running back. He's incredibly raw, so it doesn't really know quite what he's doing yet, but has ridiculous physical skills, really hard to get to the ground, just constantly moves forward despite tackle attempts, despite contact from defenders. He'd be a really intriguing guy, I think, to grab somewhere in this draft.
Hey, kind of a random question. I don't expect the Seahawks to take an edge rusher or an outside linebacker at 16, but we have a few other hosts on our station who obviously know a ton and like the idea of it. Can you tell me maybe about some of the guys who could be mid-first or late-first there?
Yeah, I think the edge rusher class is, I think they have a big three. Dallas Turner, who most people are expecting to go number 8 to Atlanta, Jared Verse from Florida State, and then Laiatu Latu from UCLA. Those two guys, I think, could definitely be in play in the middle of the first round somewhere. And Latu, to me, is the really interesting guy because I think he's a genuinely elite edge rusher prospect. When you start looking at his PFF grades, his production in terms of pressure rate, he's right up there with Chase Young and Nick Bosa as the best we've ever seen come into the NFL. But he's also got this worrying injury history where he was medically retired at one point in his career. And then he had to get cleared elsewhere, transfer, ended up at UCLA. And we've now seen 2 years of him playing spectacular football. But that neck injury that he suffered, I think, is going to scare some teams. And I've certainly heard it said that it's a kind of chronic thing that will shorten his NFL career. So you might have a player who is seen as this incredible prospect, but you might not get more than one contract out of him. And I don't know that anybody has a good answer for what the value of that is. You know, is that worth taking in the middle of the first round? Is it worth taking at the top of the second round? But he's a player that could immediately be a high-level NFL pass rusher off the edge.
Is there a player in this draft that you feel like isn't getting the love that they deserve? I asked you about the running back position. You told me about the kid from Purdue. But is there a guy that you feel has a first-round grade that probably isn't going to be drafted in the first?
He might get drafted in the first, but I think Troy Franklin from Oregon is being slept on a lot. Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU is pretty much everybody's consensus wide receiver four. I don't really see why, what separates him from Troy Franklin, to be honest. They're both sort of deep threat specialists. Franklin was more productive in college. He's a little bit slower, at least relative to sort of 40 time, but he's got a good 40 time. I mean, he ran a 4.4 flat, I think, 4.39. He's got incredible production at college. He enticed a guy like Bo Nix, who I think is sort of generally a conservative quarterback, into throwing him an absolute ton of deep balls. You know, when you're able to get a guy that doesn't want to throw deep, throwing deep, there's probably some signal to that noise. So I think Franklin is a receiver that this is an incredible receiver class, and he might not get drafted in the first round in large part because of that. He might sneak into the bottom of the first round. There's a bunch of teams around there that do need wide receiver help. But Franklin, I think, has a strong argument to be seen as like the fourth best wide receiver in this class. And he's not getting that that love anywhere.
He's Pro Football Focus's Sam Monson. His two-round mock draft is available at PFF.com. While Sam is an expert and very, very good at this, you guys can do it too. Head to pff.com/mock and you can make a mock just like Sam. And it's really, really fun. The mock simulator is awesome. I've done a couple different versions. The Seattle front office hasn't called me yet, but it's a matter of time. Sam, we appreciate your insight as always. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam.
Anytime, guys. Take it easy.
All right, let's get to four down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, what year two player do you expect to have a big impact?
Man, I'm waiting on this young man. Only played four games last year. That's Anthony Richardson. This is going to be like his rookie year for me.
Yeah.
He got banged up, played four games, three touchdowns, one interception, completed 59% of his passes, also 577 yards through the air. He had four rushing touchdowns. So now is how are the Colts going to support him? The Colts have a first round. I believe they have the 15th pick, second round, the 46th pick. In the third round, they have the 81st pick. In a mock draft, I saw a cornerback, Terrion Arnold from Alabama, is going to be the pick. You never really know how that's going to go down. You look at that division, it's full of young quarterbacks. And I just felt kind of shorted when it came to Anthony Richardson last year because we saw how athletic he was. We saw all his workout videos. We even saw him balling out on Sundays, and it was cut short. So this is going to be like a rookie season for him. What did he learn during the offseason? How did he get better? Does he understand this offense even more? I'm excited to see how Anthony Richardson performs next year.
Second down. Let's talk quarterbacks. Who's a passer that may be getting more love than he deserves?
All right, so I'm going to give you stats for Daniel Jones and then this mystery quarterback.
Okay.
And you take a wild guess who it is.
Okay.
Daniel Jones. Now, I've been on Daniel Jones' head, rightfully, but there's a quarterback who needs some heat, too. Daniel Jones in 48 career starts, first 48 career starts, 19-29. This other quarterback, 20-28. Pass rating, 85.4. This other quarterback, 85.5. Passes, touchdown passes, interceptions. Daniel Jones, 55-33. This other quarterback, 55-35. Pass and rush yards combined. Daniel Jones, 12,000. This other quarterback, 12,200. Yards per attempt. Daniel Jones, 6.7. This other quarterback, 6.7. Really close when it comes to these numbers. Any idea who I'm talking about?
Wild guess, and I think I'm wrong. Justin Herbert?
Not Justin Herbert. Okay. Oh, no. Heck no.
Oh, no. Well, I was thinking, like, who's a quarterback that would have would be really good, but whose record would be around 500. I got stopped in the record.
This guy's already been a Pro Bowler. I'm talking about Trevor Lawrence. No one is talking about Trevor Lawrence having some pressure on him. I think because they made the playoffs 1 year, I get that. So did the New York Football Giants. But we put a lot of pressure on Daniel Jones. He's in New York. He's going to have that pressure. It's almost like Trevor Lawrence is tucked away little old Jacksonville, and no one's really saying anything about him. He needs to perform this year. They're already talking about contract extensions with Trevor Lawrence. I get it. You see the talent, but I think Trevor Lawrence needs a bit more pressure applied to his situation. Daniel Jones is getting what he deserves. Trevor Lawrence deserves a bit too.
Third down. can't wait for this one. What did Bill Belichick say to the Falcons that made you respect him more?
Man, Stacey, have you ever, you know, you got friends that put you down as a reference sometimes for their job.
Sure.
They hit me up and fill out the email. And sometimes the friends that hit me up and say, hey, man, they're going to get hit you up for this reference. Can you do it? I go, yeah. And in my head, I'd be like, man, I don't think he's going to be good for this job. But that's my boy, so I'm going to support him
so
all day.
I'm going
to support him. I'm talking, Bill Belichick said his key assistants are better soldiers than generals. Like, goodness gracious, Bill Belichick.
Wow.
He goes, look, I ain't going to go out there. I'm not going to lie. McDaniels already put me in a bad position. Patricia already put me in a bad position. So he's talking to these teams across the league, and he's saying, look, man, these guys are good at what they do. But when it comes down to leading a team, getting in front of a squad, leading a coaching staff, they're probably not the dudes. They can be really great assistants, offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, your right-hand man. But leading the pack, he does not see that. So I respect him. I respect him because I don't think I've ever not referred my guy for a job. I'm the best reference you can have because I'm not going to gas you up, but I'm also not going to throw you under the bus either. So, Bill Belichick, hey, I salute you, sir, for your honesty.
I like to think that there are listeners right now applying for a new job somewhere, and you don't know them, and they don't know you personally at all, but they're going to be like, all right, Michael Bumpus. Fourth down. Why did the Mariners have you thinking about the Seahawks roster as you watched their game last night?
Because I'm always thinking football. That's just how my brain works.
Yeah, you got a problem.
I'm watching Julio, and I go, that's an outside receiver. That's an X right there. I'm looking at Cal Raleigh. I go, put on some pounds. That could be a center right there. I'm looking at Mr. Galasse over there. I go, that's a DB right there for sure. Remember little DJ Reed out there doing his thing? I'm looking at a Polanco at second base, and I go, that's a nickel corner right there. That's just how I work. I'm watching the game, and what got me thinking about it was watching Julio run down everything that was hit to him last night, then seeing him round second getting to third, then seeing him stealing the bag at second. I go, all right, if these guys were on a football team, what positions would they play? I look at Luke. Obviously, Luke is going to be your tight end. He's going to be your he's more like a Mark Andrews type of tight end, right? He can get busy a little bit, but more hands than anything. And then I'm looking at our guy Walter on the mound. I go, he's clearly our quarterback. That's just me. Nothing real special there, Stacey. I was just watching the game and saying, all right, if these guys play ball, what positions would they play for your Seattle Seahawks?
It is crazy how similar, just height, weight. Like, obviously, the body build is a little bit different. Strengths are a little bit different, but for Julio and DK.
Yeah.
Like, Julio, you could literally plop him onto an NFL team. I don't know how he do. I don't know how those hands are. I have no idea.
I mean, we know he got hand-eye coordination, but can you catch a football?
Do you think it would be, you know what, I already know the answer. I was going to say harder for DK to come out here. The answer is yes.
Yeah.
No disrespect to DK Metcalf, but I think it's harder to hit a baseball than it is to if you are already
anything.
An athlete.
Yeah.
To do something.
The worst case, Julio can run down on kickoff and attempt to make a tackle.
There you go.
You know?
Yeah.
DK ain't touching nothing these guys are throwing.
I know he's a 49er, but quarterback Brock Purdy might have saved someone from a wild animal attack back in February. We'll tell you what happened next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey. And listen, Bump and I are out of here early. We've only got 30 more minutes with you guys. And coming up next, we got What I Need to Know. So get your questions in now, if you wouldn't mind. That'd be really helpful. 866-979-3776. That's the Mac and Jack's text line. Again, 866-979-3776. Any question you have, send it there. We'll start with our first story in The Timeline. A man has been charged in federal court for stealing millions of dollars worth of merchandise from the Masters. It was stolen from Augusta National Golf Club in Georgia. Richard Glebenski was accused of transporting those items across state lines to Tampa, Florida. It looks like they were taken from the club and other locations beginning in 2009. So this was over many, many, many years, which is why he has millions of dollars worth of merchandise. I don't know whether or not he worked for the golf club. The court records didn't make that clear. If you've been stealing it since 2009, I would be surprised if every year since 2009 you've just got some tickets to go to see the Masters. Like, I wonder if he did work at the club and was stealing merchandise. I don't know. It does not say that. It just has his name and that he was transporting it across state lines.
Either he worked there or he's extremely connected because you don't just go to the Masters that way. And for so long, what was the thing that got you caught up? What exactly? Where did you slip up? And also, You did it for what, 09 to 22?
2022.
Goodness gracious. Greedy, maybe? Like, you get away with a couple things. I think you just ride off into the sunset and say, yeah, I did that. But he was clearly there every single year. He's connected somehow to someone. And yeah, because it's hard to get that stuff. There's some stuff they sell at the Masters that you don't get online. So I understand the intrigue by the items, but goodness gracious, that's a bit much there, bro.
Okay, so Jason Meisner does say it's an ex-employee of Augusta National Club.
There you go.
So for a 13-year
period. Was he taking, like, the discounted items?
I don't know. I don't know if it's, like, maybe you were purchasing it with a discount. It sound, when you say illegal merchandise and taking it, I'm hearing stealing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so that's what's going on with Augusta. Still some stories coming from the Masters, even though it's over. Next story, Brock Purdy confirmed on the Pat McAfee show that he helped save a Bay Area news anchor from a coyote while filming a John Deere tractor commercial. Cut number 11. Take a listen.
I can't believe that was a real thing, but yeah, she walked by, and then sure enough, she said she's a news anchor, and I was like, dude, I just saved a news anchor's life from getting eaten by a coyote, but it's real, man. I can confirm it. So
she said that coyote was like the biggest. She said, like, I didn't know San Francisco had coyote. What the hell's going on over there?
I didn't either, dude. We're shooting this commercial by a hill on the outside of the city, and I see this thing, you know, trotting by, and it had a long tail. I was like, bro, it looks like a mini wolf. And sure enough, I, like, no one was gonna scream, and I was like, all right. And so I screamed, and I was like, yo, there's a coyote. And that thing went running off. But yeah, it could have been an ugly day on the shoot, but we saved her.
I don't know that you saved her life.
That's what I'm saying.
You, like, definitely saved her dog.
I mean, and if you just read the headline, it makes you think that Brock Purdy wrestled a coyote and let the news anchor get away.
Coyote.
He just yelled coyote. Thank you for your awareness.
Thank you,
that,
Brock.
That shows his pocket presence. He sees the safeties,
exactly.
The linebackers.
Peripheral it makes vision.
It makes sense.
1,000%.
But when I saw the headline, I go, all right, man. Okay, I get it. I get it. Brock Purdy, Mr. All-American jawline, last pick in the draft. Good old boy. Let's pump him up. All he did was yell. I've yelled dog a whole bunch of times growing up. I've saved many lives then, apparently. Because dogs get out all the time in Cali. And, yeah, there
not
are coyotes
us hating
in Cali.
On Brock Purdy.
We are hating, huh? We
but,
are hating.
But here's the thing. He's joking. I think it's tongue-in-cheek when he's like, I saved her life. But there is that kind of layer of, like, Brock, you just kind of yelled it.
I mean,
I don't know.
He's yelled. Maybe. Good for you.
Yes.
Good for you.
No, we are blatantly hating. I will not back. I will admit that. I will be the first to admit that. Well, speaking of the Pat McAfee show, Bum, tell me what you think of this pairing. Bill Belichick will co-host the Pat McAfee show on day one of the NFL draft. This is the weirdest combination of people I can think
it's
of.
It's not going to be entertaining. It's going to be Pat McAfee doing what he does and Bill Belichick just being as bland as possible and showing no personality. I would be surprised. You know, I'm going to tune in just to see if he just breaks out of his shell a little bit and shows some of that that humor that I hear about every now and then. But was there, like, an audition tape? Who thinks this is going to be a good idea?
Well, exactly. I think the person who thinks it's a good idea must work in sales, because what you just said, I'm going to tune in to watch, is exactly how I feel and exactly how most people listening are. They're like, well, I mean, obviously I'm going to see what it looks like.
Yeah.
I'm going to see what this polar opposite combination of people, how it plays off. And the reason is because you wonder if there's going to be awkwardness that's weirdly enjoyable to watch. You wonder if it's going to be charming. Maybe Pat McAfee, who is a very kind of endearing person during interviews, brings out a side to Bill Belichick that's surprising. It is an interesting combination. And, like, it doesn't have to work if people are watching, which is kind of how media works, isn't it?
You see that that meme of Kanye smiling, then he immediately goes to a straight face. That's how I assume Bill Belichick is going to be. He'll crack a joke, he'll smile for a little bit, and then boom, stone cold straight face all over again.
Can we talk about Jontay Porter again?
Yeah.
Let's get back to this for the timeline. If you are just now joining us, Jontay Porter, who was a player for the Raptors, sometimes on their G League squad, has been issued a lifetime ban by the NBA. That was announced this morning because the NBA did an investigation into some bets that he had placed, and they found out that, yes, he was betting on NBA games. Not only that, he was disclosing confidential information about his health to a bettor ahead of Toronto's March 20th game. And another person connected to a bettor placed an $80,000 wager on Porter to hit the under on all of his over-unders in the game. In that game, Porter pulled himself because he was feeling an illness.
Hey. My man was trying to do whatever he can to get that bag. not very smart. Here's my question. How do they handle this if it is a star who was involved in all this? Do you think he gets a lifetime ban off top, or do you think they find a way to suspend him, maybe fine him a bunch of money, but to let it go? Because guys lower on the totem pole are the guys you use to set an example. Now, I think this is probably the right way to go when it comes to Porter and his betting and all that. But what if, like, KD was caught up in something like this? You think they're going to ban him for life? We do feel like the MLB would do anything and everything to cover up Shohei Ohtani's deal, right?
I don't know how you can't is the problem. Like, my gut tells me that star players never get the same treatment because they're stars. Mm-hmm. And that MLB, who did the investigation, has a vested interest in keeping their stars present. Jonte Porter, no disrespect to Jonte Porter, is not a superstar. But I also don't know how, if an investigation uncovered this as easily as this investigation did. And there had been rumors that, like, Jonte Porter was using his own name on some of these accounts.
Silly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I just thought I'd throw it out there.
Bump, you asked how they would handle a star doing this while they make him play minor league baseball for 2 seasons. That's Michael Jordan.
Oh. Yeah. I'm like, Pete Rose didn't play minor league baseball.
I mean, if
baseball.
You want, I guess that's true. A different commissioner. But if there is an example of, like, what happened with the star, it's, we'll sweep it under the rug, but we will punish you. Yeah. We're just not going to say that we're punishing you because it's going to ruin your legacy forever.
That is one of the great sports what is.
Yeah, I like
Does
that
Does anyone think that
yeah.
wasn't a punishment?
For sure. I mean, you got to think it was a punishment. My guy was in his prime.
He won a championship right before retiring.
Yeah.
Like, there was no season in between the first three.
Well, I think there are people that look at it and they think of the family connection honoring his father, and they're like, well, yeah. I could see it. Like, the timing of it, I think, to some people makes sense. It's so hard for me not to see it as clearly a punishment for gambling.
It could be both.
It could be both.
It could be both.
But that is a good point, Curtis, that we may have an example of what it looks like for the league. Different era, different commissioner. Here's the thing. If it was apps and FanDuel apps and all that stuff didn't exist when Jordan may or may not have been gambling, it does now. If the league has evidence staring them in the face like they did with Jonte Porter, and if that person's name instead of Jonte Porter is LeBron, that's when I don't know how you can. That's when I don't know how you can sweep it under the rug. Like, Shohei Ohtani, thankfully, he was found for his sake to not be connected to it at all. And that was an IRS investigation. But, like, information is spread differently now. Information is available at a rate that it's never been before. I don't know how you can hide something if it were to happen to a star now.
You can do whatever you want to.
I don't know, man.
You can do whatever. You think, man, come on.
We're
about to get deep in this piece,
no, so
all right?
Listen.
Let's climb up. Let's talk about these politicians and what they cover up all the time.
You're not wrong.
You kidding me? You can do whatever you want to in this country. You got enough money.
You're not wrong, but
don't trust the system.
Sure. But I'm just saying. So Jonte Porter had placed bets on 13 NBA games. He wasn't playing in any of them.
He ain't nice,
right?
though.
But
Stacey.
He bet against his own team.
He ain't
if
nice.
LeBron was hurt, not playing in any games, and bet against the Lakers, and that information was available, and not only did the NBA have it, but, like, FanDuel was able to release it to TMZ. You know what I mean? Like, that information's just out there.
You know what you got? You got pretty girl syndrome. Pretty girls get away with everything. My wife gets pulled over, never gets a ticket.
Get your questions in for What I Need to Know, 866-979. Oh, just kidding. We're not doing What I Need to Know. We're going to have...
We got Ryan Stanek.
Oh, yeah, we got a change of plans. We were able to pull a player. So Ryan Stanek is joining us next. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
All right, a little bit of a switch up. Andres Munoz is going to join us in just a moment. We're going to head to the text line while we grab him from the clubhouse and just look at a few of your questions. Bump, you see a sweep today happening for the Mariners? That was our first one for What I Need to Know.
Yeah, it's going down. It's going down. Okay.
Why did you not say yes?
Yeah, I mean, the vibes are good
only.
Right now. The pitchers are doing their thing. The bats seem like they're heating up. Defensively, these guys are looking better. I think they've already won the series, done something that I haven't done all year, but this would be perfect.
What I need to know, of all the Seattle area pro sports teams, who will have the most rewarding season? That's tough.
That is a tough
That's
one.
That's really tough.
I think it's probably the Storm, because they're bouncing back. They had a good draft this year. And, man, the two teams you can almost count on every year are the Storm and the Sounders, honestly.
Yeah.
The Mariners and the Seahawks have been up and down the last few. So, no, I'm going with the ladies, WNBA. I'm going with the Storm.
Yeah, I was going to chime in with who I thought, but I think I'm settling with that one. So I'll go to another question instead. You know what I'm going to do? While we wait for Andres Munoz, I'll throw in a question. So we were going to talk to Ryan Stanek. Kind of switched it up a little bit late, but I was going to ask him, hey, you won a World Series with Houston in 2022. Obviously, no one here loves that team, but you got to respect it. You know, oh, just kidding. Ryan Stanek is joining us. Ryan, do we have you?
Hello.
Okay, we're doing some switcheroos here. Ryan, this is actually perfect timing because I was literally asking Bump the question that I was just about to ask you, so I'm going to go ahead and roll with it. You were part of a World Series team in 2022, and it's okay, you know what I mean? Like, I know not a lot of people in Seattle love Houston, but we respect it. You can respect a World Series win. It's a great accomplishment. What have you learned as one of the most important pieces of a World Series team? Like, every team has talent, but, like, what makes a World Series championship team different?
I think it's a lot of expectations and, like, and holding people accountable, like, in the clubhouse and having that bond in the clubhouse that's close enough to where you feel comfortable holding people accountable for getting their stuff done. You know what I mean? Like, it's one thing if you have people that are, like, trying to hold everybody to a certain standard of work and performance and dedication, but it's a different animal altogether whenever you're comfortable enough telling somebody and like the team is comfortable enough telling people that, hey, this is not what we do here. This is how we do things. And this is what it's going to take to get it done. And I think it's so much stemming from the clubhouse being a tight knit group that matters the most.
Yeah, it makes complete sense, man. I've played on horrible teams. They're nothing like that, so that makes sense.
But you made friends along the way.
Hey, made a lot, lots of friends along the way. But here's the most important question, Ryan. Did you tag him last night? We couldn't tell on TV. You know, they didn't have the angle. I go, my man might have got him last night at first base.
That was the truth.
Do you think you got him, or was he safe?
Yeah, I definitely got him. But it was definitely a situation where, like, I know I did, but the camera, like, you have to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that, like, right, you did it and you beat his foot down. Like, I think it was a situation more where whatever the call on the field was going to stand regardless because everything happened so fast. You know, like, you have to prove that it happened one way or another to, like, get a call overturned. And if there's no angle, if there's no whatever, like, there's nothing you do about it. And it all, like I said, it all happened so fast that, and it was so close anyway, that I wasn't really expecting the call to get overturned just because of, like, even watching the replay, like, on the board, like, while it was happening, like, I was like, wow, that happened way faster than I had even initially had seen it happen while it was happening.
It feels like one of the coolest things as a pitcher would be making a defensive play. Like, you'll have your occasional kind of, like, you know, like a 1-3-3-1 kind of moment, but, like, a really cool one. Like, is there part of you that's like, yeah, that moment was pretty awesome? Like, I'll take that moment.
I mean, I would have said that if I'd have got him out. If you'd have been, out,
a strike would be
really
cool.
But whenever we didn't get the out and I'm all bloodied up, I was like, well, that didn't work out well.
Hey, I played football, so there were guys on our team who didn't play, and if and when they didn't play at the end of the game, they would run and just slide on the grass so their jersey got dirty. So at least you got a little dirty last night, you know. At least you got a little dirty.
Yeah, it was weird. I wasn't stoked about that, especially. I was like, man, now I'm dirty and I got a pitch.
Ryan is not one of those guys. He's like, I respect to them, but that's not
it's
me.
Like when it's like when you spill something on your white shoe, you're like, dang, man, I got to walk around like this the rest of the day.
Yeah, this is a little upsetting.
I feel it. Hey, when I love asking this question to professional athletes because, you know, there had to be a moment where you realized, like, man, I'm throwing gas. I think I'm going to be able to do something with this arm. Do you remember when you had that moment?
I always threw fairly hard, but I think it was probably my first game of my senior high school. It was, like, I'm from Kansas, and it was, like, I don't know, 35 degrees, and I'm playing in a game, and I had a fair number of scouts there because there was me and a guy named Bubba Starling. He played in the big leagues with Kansas City, and we were playing against each other. And after the game, my phone was, like, blowing up, and I didn't obviously know that it's Kansas High School Baseball. They didn't have radar guns or anything up, but, like, my phone was going nuts, and I finally got a hold of a couple people that had called me, and they were like, "Do you know how hard you were throwing today?" And I was like, 96, 97. And they were like, I think I'd been like up to like 93 before that. Yeah. And they were like, yeah, like there was a big, big jump and kind of like, I think caught a lot of people off guard.
It was amazing. They're playing us off. They're playing us off now. Ryan, we've appreciated your time so much. Thank you so much for joining and having some fun with us. And have fun today in this finale. Thanks so much.
Appreciate you, Ryan.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
We're getting played off like the Oscars here. Thank you to Ryan for joining us. You have a matinee baseball game coming your way. We're going to send you straight to pregame. Don't forget Bryce Miller on the mound. And you have your typical lineup. Julio looks like he's leading off today. So let's see if he can continue that streak and if Mitch can continue making his streak 8 games. Pregame show coming your way next.